The goal of this podcast is to help you break in and thrive in advertising and marketing. We do that every single week by sharing the stories and advice of those rocking it on the other side. This week, we welcome and learn from Jeff Palaishore, the marketing director at Allagash Brewing Company. Allagash White, you ever heard of it? You ever had it? If not, you should try it if you're 21 or older. And how I got to notice him or learn from him was that he made Ad Age's 2023 list of breakout brand leaders. Jeff shares his insights from his professional journey and the evolution of Allagash. Based in Portland, Maine, Allagash was founded in 1995 and has grown from a local brewery to a powerful brand with a strong presence. Jeff, originally from Southern California, shares his experience working for the brand, and the brand's known for its inclusive approach and innovative strategies in the craft beer industry. Discusses the company's shift in marketing strategies, particularly how it navigated the changes brought about by the pandemic, including the successful introduction of the 12-pack cans just before the lockdown began. So Jeff teaches me and will teach you the company's history from its scrappy beginnings under founder Rob Todd to its current status as a significant player in the beer market. I'm telling you, you're about to get a masterclass. You will learn the importance of adapting to changing market conditions, as demonstrated by Allagash's strategic shift during the pandemic, which is crucial for any sustained success. This adaptability and clear understanding of a brand's core values and audience allowed Allagash to navigate in uncertain times effectively, and maybe how you can do that in your career journey. You're going to learn from his journey, which underscores the value of aligning your work with your personal interests and skills rather than conforming to the scripted path, the quote unquote scripted path, which we kind of allude to towards the end. His transition from exploring various fields to finding his niche in brand management highlights the importance of self-awareness and pursuing a career that resonates on a personal level. You're going to want to connect with Jeff. LinkedIn. Send him a note. Personalize that invite. Say Breaking and Entering sent you. And I'm sure he'll get back to you. If not, reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'll help make you introduce you. And go ahead and check out our Instagram for his recommended resources. That's all I got. Now on with the show. This is the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. And as a usual, I'm your accomplice, Gino Schellenberger. Kick it, Mikey. All right. Jeff Palaishore, welcome to the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. How the heck are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me on here.
I'm excited to have you on. You got a nice shirt on. If those that are listening, probably just listening right now, go to our Instagram, check out this awesome shirt for that video clip, Allagash Brewing Company, sporting it today. You got some sun in your window as well. Where are you at, Jeff?
I'm working out of my home office today. So it's nice. We're still hybrid and on the marketing team. I love being up at the brewery. We have an incredible space. It's so energetic up there. But being able to have a space to reflect and sort of do that deeper work a couple of days out of the week is quite a treasure.
Yep. And people know they clicked on this for a reason. You are the marketing director at Allagash Brewing Company. Based in, tell the people where you're at.
We are based out of Portland, Maine. We were founded in 1995, and we've been in the same location in Portland ever since we were founded and opened our doors in July 1995.
That was a good year. I was not born yet, actually. Wow. I don't like to talk about that.
Okay.
Maine. Portland, yeah. Maine. Tell me about that. I've never been. Beautiful. What's the vibe like? How long have you been there? Give me the rundown. Like, paint
your picture for me. You know, I'm biased, obviously, but I think you're missing out. It's So I'm not from me. I'm from Southern California. So this whole thing feels like a grand adventure to me. And, you know, Maine is just one of these places that I think exists in folks' romantic imagination. And it should, you know, it is vacation land. It is all the things that slogans say that it is. And Portland is a fascinating city because it's quite small. You know, the actual city population is 60,000-75,000 people, a little bit more when you include the metro area. So when we see comp cities, you know, it's really tiny cities that are comparable to us. But because of the extraordinary tourist presence, it also gets millions of visitors a year. You know, massive Carnival cruise line, cruise ships coming through, millions of people on their way through up to Acadia National Park, which gets over 3 million visitors a year. So it is both very small, but also very worldly at the same time. And thanks to, you know, the incredible presence on the waterfront and then just the natural resources of Maine, it really is kind of a paradise for food. And over the last 20 years or so, you know, chefs from all around the world have made their home in Portland so you can get some of the best bagels, the best sushi, you know, best Italian food, anything that you can imagine.
And how does Allagash fit in this picture? It was founded in 1995. Maybe the owners lived in Portland, Maine. Tell me how this the brewing company fits in this picture.
Yeah, so we were founded in 1995 by Rob Todd, who was the founder, the owner, brewer, and to this day is, you know, he's the founder, owner, and my boss. So incredible continuity over that time. He's actually originally from Massachusetts, went to school in Vermont, spent some time out in Colorado, you know, the classic ski bum of the kind of 1990s sort of experience, heading back to grad school, most likely be a geologist, and then made a pit stop back in Vermont, needed a job and got a job washing kegs at Otter Creek Brewing Company. And then, as he tells it, the next day, he knew what he wanted to do with the rest of his life. So he opened up Allagash about a year and a half after starting at Otter Creek, but he chose to open it up in Maine, in Portland, because he just wanted to be there. He wasn't from Maine. He knew it, but he thought he had the access to clean water, the outdoors, like that was a life and a lifestyle that he wanted to live. And he thought, well, there's too many breweries already in Vermont, so I need to go somewhere else. So, you know, we look back and these numbers are sort of astonishing to see how many breweries these small states can handle now. But that sense of wanting to kind of, have a space of his own and open up his own thing was incredible. This was at a time when this would have looked pretty weird, right? Like his mom, his dad, like people weren't thrilled the idea of starting up a brewery. This it seemed sort of random and odd.
Sure.
He was really attracted by, and I think a lot of folks are drawn to the ability to both be creative, be scientific, be technical, right? It really brings a lot of skill sets together. Rob is incredibly oriented towards engineering and construction and thriftiness. So, you know, he was getting old dairy tanks and old walk-in freezers from McDonald's and getting those for hop coolers and, you know, welding things together and digging the trenches.
Scrappy.
Very passionate.
Yes.
Very, exactly.
I love that.
Yeah. Never really thought it would amount to much more than, you know, a nice small business in the state of Maine. And now we're in 20 states in the District of Columbia across the United States. So pretty incredible.
Absolutely. And then where do you come into the story?
So, you know, there's been these wide and wild curves in craft beer. You know, there was a real bubble in the 1990s when he opened, and then that sort of died off in the late 90s and early 2000s. And then things really started to pick up in the mid 2000s. And then that was sort of a time of like, just make whatever you can, it's going to sell. And more breweries were coming into the business. The number of breweries in the United States was just dramatically increasing year over year. And we finally got to this place by around 2012, 2013, where we had to expand our capacity. And there's many capacity constraints in brewing, as there is in any manufacturing. And we added a new brew house. And we were finally in a place where our ability to produce might actually outstrip the demand that we had. And so Rob and our HR director thought, well, maybe now we should actually develop a marketing capability. And so they posted for that position. I saw it. Allagash White, our flagship beer, was and is my favorite beer. And so I thought, I should apply for this job. And they did. And I've been there for, as of March, 10 years.
Got it. So your love for the Allagash white beer sparked your interest. And beyond the beer, your love for the original beer, what else kind of drew you to the role?
So I had taken, you know, and this sort of speaks to my path to this point overall, but
yeah,
you know, working backwards to some extent, I wanted both new challenges. I enjoyed where I was, but I was, ready to sort of take on new challenges and learn new things. And I'd also had the experience of working for, in a kind of entrepreneurial but structured organization. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a skill set that I could really bring in a valuable way here. And then something that that's all sort of, what you see on paper. What I discovered as I was talking with folks, more than I could have ever imagined, but I got the sense that the cultural fit, the environment and what was going to be asked of me was going to be a good fit for me.
How'd you find that out? And what were those like indicators?
I think that it's interesting because there both were the indicators and then what was even deeper than I could see. And then also, honestly, how we've changed and transformed over time.
Mm-hmm.
Where I had worked before and what's true in so many different large consumer goods companies is that, the manufacturing facility is anywhere from offsite to just far, far away. It's a distinct thing. Maybe it's a co-manufacturer. Maybe it's 15 minutes down the road. Maybe it's 2,000 miles away. Those are all things that I experienced prior to this. The intimacy of the connection with the product and was deeply appealing to me. I think I do love food and I actually always prized working in food. But even more fundamental than that is that I really prized working in with something tangible, something that you could touch and see and feel and hold. Not everything has to be that, but that meant a lot to me. And the ability to sort of be in this environment where, to get to, from one space to another, or from one desk to the other, don't walk basically, through production space. You taste the beers as part of a quality control process. That intimacy of connection with what we make was really, really appealing and sort of spoke to like what I actually want as opposed to this sort of a little bit more theoretical existence. And
right.
So that I think was the biggest insight for me. And it proved to be even more correct than I could have.
Right. Cause I'm assuming at the start or maybe still today, your office was probably very close to where they're brewing the actual product.
Exactly. We're right now, we're technically across the street and that doesn't feel too far away, but you notice it, you're like, oh, we're across the street and it's still just a walk, but
yeah,
it's so integrated. People come back and forth and, you see it, you smell it, hear it. There's so many scents and obviously you taste it. So really can't ask for more than that.
I guess there's so many ways I can take this conversation, but I am curious when you first walked in and how many years ago was that? About 10, you said?
Yeah, I mean, 10 when I started, and it was a long interview process. It was probably 6 months before that when I first walked in, but yeah.
Oh, well then actually, let's hear about that. I mean, what was the interview process like?
Well, we have gotten faster over time, and at the same time, we really do and did prize people that could fit well within the organization. And I think fit is one of those phrases that can be both very powerful and it can also be very dangerous, right? Fit can be a way of saying, frankly, excluding people who don't look like you or who don't, who don't act like you. And that can be a really dangerous thing. What we work to do is sort of find deeper commonalities of what that means. And so that's, people who care about this, people who can be communicative and thoughtful. People who see, who have a collaborative orientation. And so, the way in which we accomplished that kind of process back then has frankly through many rounds of many interviews.
Got to meet everybody, I'm sure, or a good amount of the team.
It felt like it. We've actually gotten, I think, much more efficient and retained the same quality over time by having some really thoughtful hiring processes and group. I could go through that in a lot more detail, but there's, you know, a kind of a rubric that we follow of avoiding biases before you come into the process. We've all been trained on how to do this. We're reminded of it before each time. We have questions that we divide up. There's a lot of objectivity that's built into it, and we do things tangibly. Like, we don't talk to each other in the interview process until we input objective feedback and then perhaps discuss it after that. So lots of steps are taken to ensure that people can form their own opinions in the best way.
Got it. So when you walked in 10 years ago, how would you define the brand then? And then maybe how it's changed to today?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. I mean, we've roughly doubled in volume over that time. So much of the change also requires looking at the macro environment. As you know, it was craft beer in the time that I've been there went from being sort of, you know, marginalized outsider to darling to mature and aging segment that folks aren't sure where it fits. You know, it's really been a really interesting path. And with that, our goal has always been to bring products and bring beers specifically, because that's what they are, bring our beers that we create with so much thought and care and detail and knowledge and love, but bring that to as wide of an audience as possible. And so I think that there was a time when craft beer really was built on the exclusive. You know, it was, you know, if you think about like bands, starting out in the 90s of like, oh, if you've heard of them, they're not cool anymore sort of thing. Mm. Like a little bit of that was in craft beer. You know, this it's not for you. If you know about, you know, there was what people talk about as line culture, lining up for things, exclusives, whales is another jargon term, like beers you can't get. There was a lot of that culture of sort of exclusivity and uniqueness. And there was a lot of excitement to that and a lot of great things came out. But it was more about rarity and scarcity. We have always actually been, I think, a brand that prizes being more inclusive and more available and more open to folks. Fundamentally, our beer, Allagash White, which is a Belgian style wheat beer, is a very accessible beer that people from a wide range of backgrounds, whether they're beer lovers or not beer lovers, can really come to appreciate. And we had a really strong presence in what we would call the on-premise. So bars and restaurants where you drink on-premise.
Right.
And that had become a strength for us over time. We were very disproportionately focused in that area. What we've done and focused on is both bringing our beers, and in particular, Allagash White, our flagship beer, to more people in more places in more formats.
What type of places? What type of formats did you target early on, or where did you find the most success at?
I think there's several different ways of thinking about it, but when I first started, and for a very long time, you could only get Allagash White to drink off-premise. So purchase through a grocery store, or a liquor store, or a convenience store.
Was it in four packs?
Four packs of 12-ounce bottles. That was the only format you could buy Allagash White in until February of 2019.
Until 2019, really?
Exactly.
To me, that does seem like, I don't know, when I'm looking for beer, the four pack longer can makes it kind of make it feel a little bit more special than just your classic six.
Nailed it. And so that was great, right? Special was great, but it also wasn't broad. It wasn't as inclusive. It didn't invite as many people to that.
Right. Have one of these. I have a six pack. Try this. Exactly. Whether it's in a can or a bottle.
I talked to consumers directly. We did research where, you know, people would say like, oh yeah, like I get the Allagash White and I put those bottles in the back of the fridge.
Yes.
Save them for me.
There's only four there. Yes.
They exactly. Sleep,
yeah.
Special occasions, or like after all my roommates go to bed, that's the beer that I drink. Sort of thing.
Right.
That's great. But what we've aimed to do is, you know, be as great of a beer, be there for those folks, but be there in more occasions. So a lot of that is simply adding additional formats. Cans, which we introduced, 12-pack cans. We now have 19 chews, which are, you know, a convenience store format, but also venues and stadiums and arenas where folks are really just enjoying themselves and want a beer that they really can enjoy with it. So all those things have allowed us to play in more of those places. And then we found, you know, more and more success in on-premise establishments that reach wider range of the folks. And I think, you know, one of the big and exciting challenges that we've had as a marketing team and as an organization, and especially the sales team, is how we can broaden our appeal without shifting our appeal. How can we bring more people in without leaving behind other folks as well, right? It's not like, oh, we're not in the cool places. Now we're in the big places.
Expand without abandoning, right?
That's exactly it. But that's a big part of where we put our thoughts.
Interesting. And now the story that I read from, I believe it was Ad Age and EJ Schultz, that you were the breakout brand leader of 2023. Breakout. And I suggest people, you know, I talk about it all the time. You should be subscribed if you're listening to Ad Age and Ad Week. All the trades, that's how you break in. You got to be smarter. You got to nerd up, as I say consistently on this show. I can link to that article, or perhaps they can go find that. I think the pandemic was also pretty fundamental in your story and your success and how you pivoted from that. So you kind of led up to 2019. Can you tell me, can you paint the picture of what happened with the pandemic and how you guys had to respond to that and how you kind of thrived perhaps because of that and the shifts from that?
Yeah. I mean, I think certainly looking back, it provided all of the horrors and tragedies and uniqueness of that time was really an accelerant of a lot of forces that were already underway and enabled us to, you know, move pieces along the board of our trajectory a lot faster than we would have otherwise.
Oh, that's I like this. So there was some underlying trends, or I guess, that maybe were off, that you not as focused on. Now the pandemic magnified some of these changes that you guys were thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest and most tangible thing from a purely business perspective is that we had both the good fortune and made the good choice of launching, 12 packs of cans in February of 2020. We don't have those cans. We don't have any cans to sell, but we did have those cans. And so that was, you know, right before the pandemic. And so we had those cans to sell. But then when that shut everything down and our salespeople were at home and the traditional familiar ways of selling are unavailable to everyone, then we could really shift and pivot into that process of saying, okay, well, we're focused on chains. Well, you know, everybody became a member essentially of the e-accounts team and the chain team, and the off-premise was the sole focus for so long.
And off-premise, once again, for those, for me, because I want to make sure I'm clarifying.
Grocery stores, liquor stores, convenience stores, any place where you don't drink the alcohol there. You take it away to drink somewhere else.
Okay, 12 pack in the grocery stores was already established then.
It was established, but we were able to give it so much more dedication and effort and focus and attention. And I think it allowed us to sort of shift our attention in a way that would have been a lot harder if we had to keep spinning all the plates of all the other projects that we had going.
What if you were, do you ever think like, what if the cans weren't launched in the grocery stores already? Would that have been more difficult?
That would have been very bad for us. Yes.
Okay.
I would have thought, I think. I think we have a very healthy financial approach thanks to how Rob, our owner, manages us. So I think we would have survived, but I think it would have been a lot less inspirational.
That's sure.
That's how I put it.
Got it. So continue. I think pandemic. Yeah. So you're already off premise. You have the 12 pack in there. And I guess other than the availability, I guess people, and tell me about the consumer side of things. They're going to the grocery store. They're stocking up on liquor, beer. Home. I remember wine sales increased quite a bit. You know, people drinking at home, cocktails, Zoom happy hours. That's actually how I started this podcast. I was tired of Zoom happy hours with my family and my friends. I'm like, I saw the record button at the bottom of this and I was like, I'm going to start a podcast and do something else.
That's great. That's fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a time, right? And I think that we, you know, people were buying. I think there was a perception that things that were familiar and known and good really were effective. And Allagash White is one of those brands that it plays that role for a lot of people. And so I think we were able to be successful in that respect as well. I think the several other things we were able to do, we historically had a very long tail of support having grown out of a focus on bars and restaurants, so many of those were, you know, good customers, but like a lot of them, right? And so, you know, okay, well, you supported that bar in that city. Well, now you got to support that other bar in that city. And then you support these other three bars in that city. And then you're going to do this. And well, we're doing it through events. So we're doing it through specific posters for those events. And they were just really beautiful, thoughtful, caring things that we would do, but it was all very not scalable. And so we, in very close, tight connection with the sales team, were able to find ways to, you know, provide that authentic, genuine relationship-based support to those accounts, but also shift into something that was more scaled, that was more leverageable, that can you do it once and then have it actually, you know, be beneficial to somebody else over here. And so that focus on, you know, campaigns, things that are more organized, things that are broader, things that have a longer shelf life, so to speak, that allowed us to get more value out of our same effort. You know, fundamentally, the size of our team is the same as it was 4 years ago and basically 5 years ago. But what we've been doing has grown so much in that time because we've become more focused on doing things that can impact more people and be used more times. So we've, you know, we've continued to grow and evolve. And I think, you know, to slightly adjust topics, that's fundamentally why I'm been in the same job for 10 years and it doesn't feel like the same job, because, and why I'm so excited and happy and motivated, is that the company has changed, the industry has changed, what we're doing has changed. And so it doesn't feel like I've had the same for 10 years in the best way.
I love that. I love that. So you're giving back, and then, you know, this We're Good Together campaign that you recently launched, that was in 2022. Is that correct?
We're Good Together more prominently in 2023.
Okay, got it. And can we speak a little bit about that and like how that maybe was influenced from the pandemic and like this brand building that you're doing now post-pandemic, and how you crafted that story?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, the early days of the pandemic, that, you know, that April to June experience where there was just so much tumultuousness, there was, you know, so much need exposed, so much, I think, emotional trauma for so many folks. And then obviously, murder of George Floyd and just all the other things that went along in June of 2020, there was so much upheaval and tumultuousness. And we found a space, and I think most crucially, a resonance and an importance for us to be an authentic version of ourselves that actually connected with people, to be an inclusive force, not an exclusive force, to be able to bring, you know, more people from more backgrounds in, and also inspire people through how we were taking. And so, you know, one of the first things that we did early on was, you know, beer giveaways for first responders, you know, and we found out of that was, well, this is great and we enjoyed this, but I think the big unexpected realization, which now feels so obvious in retrospect, was, oh, this makes people happy when we do this, right? We had, I think, previously had this residual perspective that talking about the good that you're doing in the world was an inherently selfish. Why? You don't need to talk about it. Just do it. What we found is that actually people want to hear good things.
Yes.
They
want good news is appreciated. Yeah.
They don't want to be shamed. I mean, nobody does, right? They don't want to be criticized. They don't, whatever it is, but they do want to be inspired and they do want to feel a sense of hope. And so we really strive to sort of say, this is us. This is who we are. This is the good that, this is what we're doing. This is why we think it's good. This is why we care about it. And really keep that directional arrow of effort focused on ourselves and what we're doing. It's a very solid posture. It's not about telling other people what they should do, but about telling people what we're doing and what we care about, and then inviting them along. And then that's what really led.
I like that tricky.
That's what inspired us to sort of talk about this as We're Good Together. We'd been trying to find ways of expressing this, you know, broad sense of impact that we strive to have on the community, whether it's, you know, giving financially to local philanthropic partners, or connecting with them in an engaged way, or committing to purchasing over £1 million of Maine grown green by the year 2021, which we accomplished, or preserving clean sources of water. Like, how do you bring all that together And so, or starting a recycling co-op or standing up for extended producer responsibility laws in the state of Maine, this became a pillar that, you know, even if you don't know all of those things, even if we don't tell you all of those things, you feel all those things. And then if you want to dig in, either because you're curious or if you trust us, it's there. We've got it. We'll be as transparent as we can. But if you just kind of want to know that this is good and you should feel good about this purchase and you should feel good about what you're doing, then we've given you that space.
I love it. And I love how it kind of went back to you kind of tested it out on a smaller scale. And then that led to the realization. And I think you've alluded that to this kind of process before in this conversation already. But super important for people to understand that it doesn't have to, you don't have to wait for the grand idea and a big launch. I think these smaller steps kind of lead to something beautiful.
That's a really, I think that's been a really important part of our success over the years, is that we have used, first in a lot of ways unintentionally, and then over time more strategically and thoughtfully, we've used social media as a way of airing and workshopping new messages, approaches, and platforms for us.
Sure.
It's not strategic. It's not strictly thinking testing, but it is it's almost more like doing something off Broadway. Like, let's try this. How does that work? How does it feel to us? If it works, great, move on to the next day. If it doesn't work, great, move on and do the next day.
Yep.
Also, I think brings folks along culturally. We're really, you know, going along with this sort of, you know, how we hire, how we bring people along, is that, like, there's a real sense of continuity and connectedness throughout the organization. People feel a lot of shared ownership. And so doing those things in public in front of other people also creates comfort so that things don't feel dissonant or, you know, not genuine or inauthentic. So that act of sort of trying things out first has been really
cool. I love it. Jeff, I want to switch gears, if that's okay. And, sure. You know, I've talked with so many advertising professionals that work in agency settings. I definitely want to, I would be remiss not to bring up kind of how you broke into marketing. What were the actual strategic steps from what you studied, where you went to school, how you got either that first internship or that first job? Can you kind of paint that picture? And did you ever entertain going advertising agency route and being like, and the more creative side, I guess, like art direction, copywriting? Can you kind of like lay the land from the beginning real quick?
Sure. I'm going to pause for 1 second. Lower the level here. All right. Sorry about that. Thank you for your patience. I think very, very early on, I was fascinated by the idea of advertising and advertising agencies. You know, I probably... snuck peeks at ad age, before even going to college, and sort of was fascinated by, you know, what appeared to be the totality of marketing at that point. But it never felt like it was the right fit for me personally to try to get into the agency world. As I learned more about it, I think there was something I couldn't really understand, but it didn't appeal to me. I think I now understand why it didn't. At the time, it didn't. I also honestly was interested in entertainment journalism. I was based in Los Angeles at the time, so I was focused on other things. But I definitely did get to a point in my career where I felt like, while each individual thing sort of makes sense, it's not adding up to something that feels like it's going in a really compelling direction for me. And as I started thinking about different ways in which I could approach my next steps, I started thinking about, well, what if I went to business school, which hadn't honestly been on my radar at that point. I know there's some folks who come right out of undergrad and they're planning their next step into business school. I was not that person.
And you shouldn't, right? Like,
you shouldn't right away, for sure.
I mean, for an MBA.
In my view, getting that experience is hugely valuable. I know there are some people who still, like, they have that vision for themselves. I wasn't that person. I, though, in the process of thinking about business schools, I actually saw that there was this career that was called brand management. And it seems almost absurd to think that I didn't know that that existed, but I didn't. I didn't know that that was a thing. And when I saw that, that was something really quick. I thought, like, that's right. You know, this is not advertising. This is brands, and it's about the process of being involved in a lot of different ways and being able to conduct and shepherd and lead and bring the best out of a lot of different. You know, I don't have what it takes to be a copywriter or a creative director. And I know that concretely from having worked with great copywriters and creative directors. I can collaborate with them. I can write a good brief. I can give back. I can be the right, you know, a brand partner for them. But my skills are really, and my fit is really in that brand space. So that's what led me to pursue that. And it's been really satisfying ever since.
And you graduated from UCLA with a communication studies major. And then how many years, I guess, like what were you doing in between when you graduated undergrad and in between your decision to then pursue grad school? What was going on in that world and what really sparked that?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, everything from, still continuing to explore, you know, the peripheries of the world of entertainment in Los Angeles, entertainment journalism. I was doing, all kinds of, interviews with celebrities at the time, which is incredibly low paying, but allows you to hang out with famous people.
Oh, any good people, any good stories, I guess?
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, I Michelle Yeoh, I actually managed to annoy in an interview once. I think I was like not paying attention or doing something. These were roundtable interviews. And what I can say is that if you think that she is intimidating in some of her on-screen roles, you have no idea what it's like to actually be castigated by her in person. I don't recommend crying her. That has stayed with me ever since. That one sticks out for sure. It's fun, but it's also a little weird. You know, you're sort of like, you're there, but you don't really fully belong there. Dot-com era was certainly, that whole bubble was forming. And I worked at a few places that were sort of blossoming along the way. But it wasn't even just that I didn't enjoy it. It wasn't even that great, a lot of this stuff. You know, I appreciate project management, but I'm not a product manager. And I think there were ways in which like things were fine, but I was still struggling to find where I could sort of be the parts of me that I can do best. I was sort of at a place where I was like, I don't really know what I want to do next, but.
Gotcha. And then business school. And, I believe here I see that you have USC Marshall School of Business on your LinkedIn, the MBA.
Yeah.
That was the solution, I guess, or
the business school came, the idea of business school came first, and then the realization that brand management was what was compelling was really what became very exciting at that. So it became motivating to then pursue this. And
so going into business school, you weren't exactly sure then what area?
And I think I did realize this was right around the time that my realization that working with tangible things was, I think, important to me started to really be something that I was connecting with, that I was like, oh, I actually like, because it was, you know, it was entertainment or it was .coms or it was different things that, like, people didn't know what it was. You couldn't touch it. And
out, and you wanted to maybe lock in on something that you're super passionate about.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought of it first as food, and it definitely is food, but I feel like over time, again, I've seen it's like, it's the realness of it that appeals to anything else. Yeah. But
tangible.
That was exciting. And I remember just like, there was a way in which things started to sort of make sense for me in my career as I wanted to go after. I think it's interesting to see that it's like, well, I wasn't really the most motivated person in a lot of ways, because I think I wasn't really sure what I was running for. And, you know, some people are running for success, or they're running for money, or they have an entrepreneurial spirit and they're running to start things. And I think while each of those, you know, kind of life forces, spirits exist inside of me, it wasn't dominant. And so I think actually I ended up feeling sort of lost, because I had figured out what was the path that was going to be most exciting?
Gotcha. And that path is now today, you can say?
Yeah. I mean, bringing brands that you can touch, feel, and taste to life for people.
I love it. Yeah. Now, I guess maybe my last question of this conversation for you. If looking back Do you recommend, do you think that the business school is necessary if you were going to retrace your steps? Would you say you have to go to business school to be a marketing or a brand specialist?
No, you definitely don't. I did because of where I was coming from, and also to some extent, quite frankly, because of the time and also because of the path that I wanted to take. I wanted to work in a large company. I'd worked in super small companies up until that point, and I wanted to work in a large company, got my wish. And at that time, and still to this day, if you want that, you do need to go down that path. But there are now so many more different paths that you can take to get into that space, so many more companies, and so many more ways to get into things that are like brand management that don't necessarily require an MBA. But again, that's where you have to, but the biggest piece of advice that I can give is that you have to look at yourself, where you are, what your skills are, what's actually going to make you happy, and then sort of figure out the right pieces for you. But I think that doing anything because you think you should, or because you think that's what somebody else has done, that's really dangerous. But you do have to take a pretty cold-hearted look at, well, what do I actually want? And what does it take to actually get it? If you want to get into a very large company and get that brand management training, then yes, you probably do want to get that in. But there's plenty of other paths.
But it does sound pretty nice to get the MBA and then work into large brand management where they have processes where you're really going to learn structure and see it come to life with large budgets. To me, there's value in that probably early off in your career. Excuse me. And then you can shift to a smaller brand or one you're super passionate about or one that's growing that or go from there. It, to me, it's very similar to you get your undergrad. And then you go into a large agency and then you can go into smaller agencies, perhaps that are more custom fit to what you like. Would you say that's a fair approach? I mean, for some people?
I think it's a fair approach, but I think at the same, so yes, it's a time tested and proven method. I think what you have to look at and say is like, but if I'm going to hate that bigger company or hate that agency, like,
of course,
why am I doing that? Right.
Yeah. No. That's like maybe the blueprint, I guess you would kind of say. It's like the scripted right. path in marketing.
Right. Because it's, I mean, there's all the different big companies are different and all the different big agencies are different. And like, there's obviously similarities across them, but there are differences. So I think what I would just say is put yourself into the places where you can be the version of yourself that you like best. And if you're there because you think that you need to get there because it's a check on a box to get to the next stage, it theoretically might be right. But if it's not right for you, not only are you probably unhappy, but you might actually not succeed at it. It might actually be value destroying. So
detrimental.
Check why you're doing these things and check how you actually feel.
Yeah, I had a conversation with a student, I think, in University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I was there. And she's like, I really like fashion marketing and I know that I need to get my agency time in first. I'm like, why don't you just skip that? I mean, why don't you try to get as close as possible to something that aligns with your passions? Right. And if it's fashion marketing or whatever that might exactly entail, why not try to get closer to that when you graduate?
I couldn't agree with that advice more. And I think that, the art of the informational interview is so important in all of this. If you want to approach people, especially through some kind of a connection, not something cold on LinkedIn, where you truly actually want to learn their path, right? If you're talking to that hypothetical real student, talk to people who have the kinds of positions that you aspire to in that industry, especially if it is not a veiled attempt to just get a job with them. People are really delighted to be able to share their paths. And so you really can learn out of that. And I couldn't agree more. It's like, if there's something that you think that you need to do because it's a step along the way to something else, check your assumptions on that beforehand. Yeah. Maybe that person talked to 10 fashion marketers and they're like, yeah, you do need
maybe.
Maybe. Right. But like, don't just do it to do it. And again, it could have been true 10 years ago and maybe it's not.
Yeah. I mean, we're not doctors where you have to go to medical school or engineers where you're building a plane and you need to have that degree, I guess. That's, or passing the bar. Exactly. Like there's not a one size fit all approach, or you have to pass a certain test.
There really isn't. I mean, even, you know, what marketing looks like is so different depending on the situation. You know,
right.
Somebody who's coming up through, you know, a D2C brand right now is going to have an entirely different set of experiences and skill sets than I do. And they're going to be a marketer and they're going to be incredibly valuable. And then they're going to want to go to places where their skills can be put to the best use and their passions can be put. So, you know, brands, you know, passion alone, like not to keep harping on it, but like there are brands that we shop at as a family that didn't exist 3 to 5 years ago. So that the pathways and options that exist are, you know, they're transforming all of it.
Jeff, we only kind of like, I feel like scratched the surface. So I want to make sure that people can connect with you. If they have any questions, want to learn more about your story, your advice, breaking into marketing and thriving in it, how can they reach out to you if you're willing to talk?
Absolutely. I mean, I think honestly, reaching out on LinkedIn is the best way. I've been doing it for a very long time. It's scary how long I've been doing it, honestly. So I'd reach out to me there.
Amazing. And then everybody listening, make sure you put a little note in when you connect, maybe say, heard you on Breaking and Entering, you get 200 characters, use those 200 characters. If you go to personalize invite when you connect with Jeff, or I can help you out too. If you reach out to me, I can say, hey, Jeff, check out this person too, to bump it.
Very excited.
Jeff, thank you so much again. This is a wonderful interview. I appreciate you taking the time to tell the story of Allagash and your story there and your advice and for aspiring marketers.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Nice job.